I haven't added anything.
Okay. So he's anonymous iguana.
I'm not the troubling anonymous iguana.
You're the anonymous liger.
Is that what I am?
Yeah, you're a liger.
What a dumb thing to be.
What's wrong with ligers?
Not existing is a pretty bad thing.
But they do exist.
Look, I don't want to break your bubble on Mike, but I'm pretty sure they don't. Oh, well, actually, shit, you know what? No, I need to backpedal really hard right now. They do exist. You can crossbreed a tiger and a lion, and it's a horrible idea, and it's an abomination of an animal. Kind of like pugs.
Wait, did he just say pugs are an abomination?
Yeah, that probably shouldn't exist. I mean, they're really cute, sure, but they're also bred to, like, nearly suffocate themselves with their skull and nasal passageway shape.
The liger is distinct from the smaller hybrid tigon and is the largest of all known extant felines. They enjoy swimming, which is characteristic of tigers, and are very sociable, like lions. Notably, ligers typically grow larger than either parent species, unlike tigons. So
tigons?
Yeah,
I didn't know a tigon was a thing, but that makes sense.
A liger is a male lion and a female tiger, and a tigon is a female lion and a male tiger.
I like the idea of the tigon better then.
Why?
Because I like tigers better, and like my hatred for lions stems pretty critically on the like patriarchy of lions and how, like, male lions are just awful, worthless, big, dumb bullies. And so that's like, that's really what's informing my opinion on that.
That just can't wait to be king.
I think it's more from, have you seen, I can't remember when it came out. It was a couple Valentine's days ago, but they did the like Cats movie where it was essentially a documentary on like a cheetah family and a lion's pride. And I went and saw that. The cheetah family, which was narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, which is pretty amazing.
Of course it was.
It was really fun. And then the lion pride was pretty, just pretty heartbreaking. Like, just some stupid male lion was fucking things up all day.
That's what they do, man.
I know, exactly. And that's where the prejudice comes from.
You can
Is this going to be another? Is this going to be another intro where it's like things that Scott hates? Welcome to Fancy Ramen,
where Scott hates pugs
and lions.
Should I be recording this?
If you're not recording already, you should be recording now.
And listeners, if you're not listening already, you should be listening to the Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 42. Today's November 26, 2017, and I'm Scott.
I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And you're listening to Fancy Ramen, a podcast about games and shows, and sometimes ligers.
And sometimes redundancy, too.
Absolutely.
So, happy Turkey Day, everybody.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Ooh. I think we're live, guys, by the way.
Are we actually live? Wait, are you streaming through Steam? Is that what you were trying to get at earlier?
No, I'm streaming through Twitch now.
Oh, nice. All right.
I don't know how to share this, though, so you know, it's what else.
It says you're offline right now anyway, so.
That's weird.
Or should I say we are offline?
Oh, no.
Regardless, what have you guys been playing for games? Or been watching anything? Anything exciting going on?
Well, I've got family in town, so I've been spending some time with them. Thanks to the Thanksgiving holiday, I've gotten to see a lot of relatives, and that's been nice. And so it's kept me busy. I've at least had a chance to play a little bit of games. I haven't played anything brand new. I decided to go ahead and take a crack at another Super Nintendo game, which we can talk about in a second here. And then I also found Metal Gear Solid 5 for a pretty sweet deal on Steam, so I picked it up and I've been playing, and I've got to say, the controls and the amount of flexibility in that game. Like, just the amount of movements available to Snake at any given moment is really nice. Like, it feels really good. The stealth is a little weird that you have to approach the things you're going to, say, crouch or lean against at nearly a perpendicular approach, and then it's not as easy to, say, glide along the wall without having a button that'll make you sticky to it. But I'm getting used to that, and it's just forcing me to be a little bit more finesse-based with my movements.
It's easy to forget that I think that game came out in 2015.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think since then, I've already played a few games that do stealth a little better. But like the sticky button or lack thereof is something that like Metal Gear Solid has had throughout the series, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I think like when you get used to it, it feels perfectly fine. But after playing even something like The Last of Us, The Evil Within, or any game like that where you have cases where like the stealth is either button pressed, so like you lock into the stealth by hitting a button and you unlock by hitting that same button or something like that. Or it's more fluid and they do like a slightly better job. But
right. I think that's definitely where it's just a little tricky, is that it's responsive enough that if I'm being a little too forceful with the direction that my analog stick is going, I'm running into the issue of falling out of my cover on accident or like overshooting it. So when I go to lean around a corner, every once in a while I'll just pop right out from it or I'll move away from it. And guards really love that, but I don't particularly appreciate it.
Have you gotten into like any major firefights yet, or are you mostly playing things pretty stealthily?
I like to play pretty stealthily, but I have decided, since this game is pretty adaptive to what you do, that I want to take as varied of an approach as possible over time. So I've been a lot more lethal with this game than any other. I'm actually shooting explosive barrels. I'm, you know, sniping from a distance to get headshots on some weaker or like less valuable enemies that I don't plan on Fultoning out. And I'm enjoying throwing grenades to destroy equipment, things like that. But I'm just starting out. So one of the other issues with it too is I'm not particularly well equipped. And that's also another reason I'm definitely not engaging in too much of a firefight, is because Snake's a great soldier, but he's a little fragile. And so I don't want to, I haven't died from any fights yet, but that's also because when I get into like a really serious fight, the first thing I do is go and restart again from the checkpoint, which I think as I have better equipment, I'll become more confident with approaching enemies. But for now, I don't feel particularly good at the combat. And so I'm worried about my survivability when I get busted and there's like 20 enemy units around.
If I'm not mistaken, you'll also start to get more camouflage, or rather suits, that will allow you to play more aggressively as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I only have a little bit for camouflage availability.
So you just go naked right now, right?
Can you go naked?
Well, naked within the sense of you're not wearing a shirt. You kind of Rambo it.
Oh, I haven't done that. No, I haven't been playing Naked Snake. I've been Venomous. Wearing that, I think it's Tiger Stripe.
I don't recall how they, if there's even a camo index like they had in 3. But I don't think there is.
No, there is not a camo index, that's for sure.
But they definitely have, like the camo does make a difference depending on what you're wearing and where you're at.
Absolutely. I think, though, it's part of their idea to make things seem more intuitive or immersive by not having, you know, any sort of quantitative measurement, as opposed to just having guards less likely to spot you. And you kind of have to intuitively understand that range and also what surfaces you're actually camouflaging well for.
Yeah, and let's be real, like, I
that's
love
more
three.
Realistic, sure.
Yeah, I love 3, but being able to switch between all the camos not only felt like maybe a little too gamey, but it was also kind of a break in the flow of the game.
Absolutely, and that's why you had to beat the end with the Trank gun to get his camo, so you were like at nearly 100% camouflage all the time.
I can't remember. Isn't there something specific with that mechanic or with the mechanic behind? I think it's the moss camouflage, right?
Yeah, the moss camouflage. You're correct.
Which is basically like a ghillie suit compared to like modern day PUBG. I don't know if you guys know, but
I mean, it's not a ghillie suit in the sense that it has actual reeds and plants coming off of it. But I do remember that the moss camouflage had at least a benefit where you had like a set number that you really couldn't go under with it, if I remember correctly.
And do you restore stamina if you laid down in the sun or something like that too?
I'm looking up a Wikipedia article right now, and it says it recharges stamina and health in sunlight or other intense light like that generated by the torch. Received by sneaking up on the end and holding him up. Aim for his head at a certain amount of time. He'll say, "I don't think so," twice, then drop it. It raises the player's camo index up to 95% if crawling over a patch of moss, which can be found nearly everywhere. And it looks just like the camo itself, combined with face paint, blah, 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 blah. But I remember it being like really good in general, because I remember wearing that all the time and always having a high index, like between 70 and 90 for most surfaces.
I can dig it.
You don't have a trank rifle, though, at that point, because by killing the ends, you get his trank rifle.
You have to sneak up on him from behind. It's really tough.
So, yeah, that along with the whole camo swapping were maybe some of my biggest complaints about that game. Like, the ends boss fight is the most enjoyable.
You didn't like the ends boss fight?
No, it's the most enjoyable when you actually go sniper versus sniper on him.
Oh, I don't know. I think, yeah, actually, I guess sniper v sniper is pretty fun with him. But sneaking up on him does feel like a really big accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very hard to do. I remember taking more than an hour of like knowing his location and backtracking and moving so slowly that he couldn't detect me. Like, it's incredibly difficult. There's damn bird too.
I know it happened to you at some point, or happens to you, assuming you play it more than once, where he ends up finding you either through the bird or you make a noise that you're not expecting, so you end up having to gun him down as he's running away with your trank gun. Like, it just seems kind of silly. Like, you're just like trying to shoot as many tranks as you can as he's running away from you or towards you and does like a somersault to knock you down. I don't really recall.
Yeah. It's such a great fight, though. Like, I love that as an example of just really great scripted events in a game. If you kill the end early on, which this is kind of a spoiler, but you can find him after you first encounter him in an area before, I think, even fighting the Fear, which is the second boss, if you don't count Ocelot, which I don't, since he, I don't know why I don't count Ocelot as a boss, but I just count the Pain as the first of the three. Or technically four if you count. Metal Gear Solid's very confusing. I shouldn't get into like numbering or anything. But you can kill him and then you end up facing Ocelot's elite unit in the forest instead. Like, that's such a cool idea and design. Or the alternative, which I'm sure you would have brought up, is if you wait like 2 weeks, he dies of old age in the game. So you can mess with the PlayStation clock, or you can literally just be like, I can't be this, put the game down and return to it later to find out that you've gone ahead and defeated your enemy by just waiting it out.
And everyone in your
by
codec...
outliving him.
Yeah, because he's just an old man. And everyone in your codec, or radio, I guess. I don't think this is the codec in MGS3. Your entire
support team... It is called the codec, I believe.
Is it?
Well, it is still a radio. It's just an ear radio, but I think they call it the codec still.
But regardless of the name, your support team just basically berates and belittles you.
Oh, man. The radio in that game is so good. It's half the entertainment.
So going back to MGS5, have you started listening to any of the radio communications yet, or radio logs?
Like the cassette tapes or asking for intel info?
Cassette tapes and so forth.
Yeah, I've been listening to the cassette tapes. That's, if there's one thing that Metal Gear Solid does really well, it's not the... sophomoric jokes about like sexual stuff. It's their really, really in-depth appreciation for like history and world events and how that shapes and impacts the world, and how they're able to insert the Metal Gear storyline with like real world events. So I really loved listening to them talk about the salt treaties and like the burgeoning rebel issues in the Middle East and all other sorts of things. The power struggles between the Soviets and the United States in a second stage of the Cold War. Like, it's all really, really cool stuff just to listen to. I love listening to it during travel between locations, for sure. And if I remember correctly, when I found out about the cassette tapes, I was in the middle of rescuing Miller, which is the first mission. And I just sat down with Miller and listened to like the first 9 minutes of a cassette tape before putting him on the chopper.
You're going to have to wait here a second.
Yeah, just hold up. I need to know what's going on. I didn't realize I should have listened.
I could be wrong, but I don't remember much being said, or I guess you could say recorded in fiction, regarding the wildlife and so forth of the fauna. You get that from radioing in when you're like looking at something through your scope or sniper rifle, right?
Right, yeah. And that seems to already be, and I'm only at like chapter 4, but that already seems to be pretty repetitive depending on what you're asking info for. Like, that's a Russian soldier. And I'm like, I know it's a soldier. I'm looking at the thing right next to it. Stop telling me about Russian soldiers.
And I remember...
But Scott, how would you ever know?
Yeah, how would I know he's a Russian soldier? Well, he's speaking Russian. That's my first clue.
Oh, that's right. You the whole language system. You have to get linguists in your
yeah,
army.
Yeah, Russian
before you can
and
learn.
Ukrainian and whatnot. Yeah. That's, I also really appreciate that. It's kudos to Metal Gear Solid every time for being a very detailed game. Like, a game that has details that you can't appreciate until you really sit down and think about it. Like, it almost requires reflection to realize how much detail goes into it.
Man, I can't wait for Metal Gear Solid 6.
You mean Death Stranding?
I mean Metal Gear Survive? I don't even know.
I don't even care. I'm just starting with 5, and I'm enjoying it enough that I'll stay satisfied for probably a little while, at least.
Not to go too far off topic, but there's this weird theory that Metal Gear Survive and Death Stranding are actually in the same universe, and that Kojima is still employed by Konami.
I gotta love those conspiracy theories.
What game have you been playing on? I'm assuming the SNES Classic.
I've been playing Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, and that's where the title for my new segment, Tales from a 99% Completionist, comes from, because it was only after going through all the manuals for the Super Nintendo games that I was interested in, I found that a lot of these manuals had more information in them than I would ever expect from a manual these days. Like, there's certainly something to be said that older games, their manuals actually gave away quite a bit and gave you a lot of heads up as to what was going to be going on in the game, what was available. They were a much bigger kind of walkthrough of just all the features and items and like main plot events that were going on. And in A Link to the Past, I happened to see that there were some like items or upgrades that I had never found or used. Like, I found out you could upgrade your sword 4 times, which I never did in the game. And I found that you could also upgrade your tunic more than once. And so I was just like dumbfounded at the fact that I totally missed out on some items and some upgrades and whatnot. And so I'm deciding to go back into this game and try and do it all. However, I'm coming from the perspective of someone who's played a lot of Nintendo games and never 100% completed like anything. I've gotten really close. The most tragic moment is when I got 99% of the scans in Metroid Prime. That just really sucked. That's a really crushing feeling. But I'm having a difficulty kind of with this approach, reconciling the fact that I'm normally comfortable not completing a game with the idea that this game isn't particularly long, and so I don't think it'll take me very much of my time to actually play through the whole thing again and find all of the secrets that I missed the first couple times I played it. Because I was thinking about it in comparison to something like Metal Gear Solid 5, if I were to do all the side ups and whatnot, that I may never finish that game. So it's just one of those things where, like, I'm trying to reconcile putting all of my effort into one game that I've already beaten, and I don't think I'll actually get any like greater sense of fun out of it, but maybe a slightly better sense of accomplishment by beating it and getting all of the items or upgrades, versus another game that I'm really enjoying that I haven't played before, and so you could say should be able to hold my attention for longer, and my reluctance to do more than just like some ancillary side quests and most of the main story work.
Out of curiosity, does the booklet tell you how you get the final upgrades on your tunic, sword, and shield?
Nope, it does not.
So, Cookie, do you happen to remember?
As also a 99% completionist, who am I kidding? I'm like more of a 75%. No, I do not remember.
Do you mind if I talk about
spoil
that a
spoil it?
Spoil away. You'll save me time and you'll give Cookie some peace of mind.
So I'm having troubles remembering how many upgrades you have for each or what each upgrade was.
So I can at least say for the sword, I know that the upgrade is your regular sword and then the master sword, that's two. And then three, you can upgrade it by finding, I think, the partner to the blacksmith. And then I don't know what you do for the fourth one, but apparently there's a fourth sword upgrade available.
Okay.
And then for the tunic, you find the upgrade from the green to, I think, the red, or maybe it's the blue in a dungeon. And I'm not sure if you have to find it in the dungeon or not, but I do remember that if you don't get it, you just get absolutely like destroyed by some higher level enemies in the dark world. But I have no idea then where you find the other color or how you do it. If it's in a dungeon or if it's, you know, somewhere in the dark world or it's hidden in the light world somewhere. So questions like that. I mean, and your shield, for instance, I know you upgrade, I believe, from a dungeon as well, and once by throwing into a fairy pond, but I don't think you can upgrade it that last time by throwing it in the fairy pond again, so...
That's actually how you upgrade the sword the last time.
Seriously?
Yeah, by throwing it in that fairy pond.
Are you sure?
But it's specifically...
Well, I guess you would know.
It's specifically the fountain that's at the pyramid, the last, you know, like basically the last dungeon of the game.
Oh, I did not know that.
So
okay.
There is a second fountain that you can throw items into, and that's how you get your fire shield. But this one is in the dark world at the pyramid, and you have to use a giant bomb or a super bomb to blow up that hole. Doorway.
You don't get it until way later, I think. I don't think you get a big bomb until way later in the game.
Yeah, this is legitimately correctly. Like one of the last things you would need to do or be able to do, but it is absolutely not as we both know now, it's not like you have to do it.
I still might do it because I don't know where that other tunic is, and maybe I can just toss it in, but I don't know if that's the case.
Which tunic were you missing?
Whatever the final level tunic is.
Okay.
I think it goes green and then blue mail and then red mail, and I only ever had the blue mail.
And the red mail is found in Ganon's Tower.
So, oh, okay. Did not know.
I don't remember it being missable, but I don't know. It's been a while. Been a while. Would you say that returning back to this 16-bit Zelda gives you any sort of reflection or feelings based on your previous experience with Breath of the Wild?
Because
they feel like entirely different games at this point.
They're absolutely different games. Actually, you know what? I do believe that I had commented to Sierra that I do miss an experience like A Link to the Past, if only because like it's a game that's pretty sparse in story, and the exploration and the secrets, I guess, feel a lot more satisfactory than Breath of the Wild, only in the fact that Breath of the Wild, like, you can't find, say, a secret item, for instance, like, because you don't have items in this game in the same sense that you do in the other ones. I know, for instance, that there is... Oh, you know what? I never found the magic cape. And there's another item called the Staff of Berna that allows... It works like Nairu's Love in Ocarina of Time, where it protects you from damage, but you burn magical power to do it. I found the staff, but I never found the magic cape. And it's one of those things, like, those are pretty big and useful items if you find them, including the magic medallions, which I don't remember if you need all those to get into dungeons, but you might need one or two to access a dungeon. But items like that, it's really cool. Like, they're big game changers, and you can potentially play the whole game without finding them. Breath of the Wild doesn't have anything you find that's like that satisfactory. Like, I could have even passed on getting the Master Sword, honestly, in that game. After I spent all the time doing the trials and getting enough hearts to pull out the Master Sword, I was like, oh, this is only useful for chopping off the legs of guardians, and then it burns out, and I've got to deal with enemies the normal way anyway. So what's the big deal with this item? There's less of a sense of accomplishment in secrets, and there's at least a narrative that doesn't seem, probably also because it's old and there isn't voice acting and there's no cinematics. Like, it doesn't feel as cheesy because it's an old game, and therefore I don't view it, I think, with the same critical lens as a modern game.
Are you saying Zelda's voice acting is cheesy in Breath of the Wild?
Absolutely. I don't need to save some. If I knew that Zelda was British beforehand, I probably wouldn't have bothered saving her.
Jesus.
Cold-blooded.
Hey, man.
Would you have preferred Irish or Scottish instead?
Literally anything but a Brit. Or actually, I mean, I'd prefer a British voice actor over an Australian voice actor. That'd be too much. Too much for me.
I didn't necessarily attribute it to it being like a British accent. I just thought it was maybe not the voice I would have chosen to begin with.
It's certainly not the voice in your head. Yeah.
But maybe that's why, like, Mario, in contrast, has everything figured out. Or Mario, like the development teams and people that make decisions on Mario, because they realize you don't need voices to create a narrative.
I mean, and they have voices. They're just really, like, it's pretty cutesy and very short actual, like, vocal blurbs that all the voice actors use. And I think Peach, honestly, normally has the most, like, spoken word dialogue. And she's just, like, the kind of, I guess, like, higher pitch, girly voice that you expect out of a, generic 1990s princess or damsel in distress. Like,
well, we don't, like, critically analyze it either, because I don't think a full sentence is ever delivered in Mario.
Yeah, and I don't think we probably should critically analyze it, besides the fact that they understand that dialogue would not work to their benefit. And so it's probably best for them to just not engage with, like, full dialogue. I've always enjoyed my silent protagonists in Legend of Zelda. And so by having the other characters also silent, in the sense that they don't have voice actors, but they give, written dialogue on screen, I was, I guess, always comfortable with that.
And it keeps you from hating characters like Toad, who probably would have annoying voices.
Toad's already annoying enough. Yeah.
Mario!
Exactly. Cookie, do you have any voice acting gripes?
No, not particularly, actually. I know that when bad voice acting happens, it's just bad, and let's just not talk about it. When good voice acting happens, it's good, so no one notices, and let's not talk about it.
That's definitely a thing, is if it's great, it doesn't get commented on that much. And if it's really bad, like, that's only when it really deserves any, or when it, I guess, garners any comment, but does it really deserve discussion besides the acknowledgement that you don't like it?
You know, I never watched an episode of Neo Yokio, so I can't really say anything about that.
I won't comment on
that.
Well,
if you want to know bad voice acting.
Maybe Jaden Smith is so in on the joke that he knew that was the delivery. He had to commit to that delivery to fully embrace the self-aware joke.
Oh yeah, I mean, have you read Jaden Smith's Twitter? He's obviously in on the joke. He's so much wiser than the persona that he gives. Man, okay, so we've talked a bit about my favorite bow using hero, and I hear that you picked up Horizon Zero Dawn, Cookie. Are you a better shot than I am?
Wait, have you played Horizon?
No, absolutely not. Not, and I guess I it sounds like absolutely not. I'll never play it. I just don't own it, so I haven't played it.
So I figured with Black Friday this would be a good time to pick up a new game. So I picked up three technically. I got Danganronpa 1 and 2 and Horizon Zero Dawn. I've not touched Danganronpa. I will eventually. But what I can say about Aloy and Horizon Zero Dawn is pretty much exactly what everyone was saying about Aloy and Horizon Zero Dawn when the game first came out. Oh my god, this game is amazeballs.
So, this is about the girl from Brave, and she's now grown up a bit.
And Irish technology has gotten a lot more advanced.
It kind of got out of hand.
No, but really...
Just a little out of hand.
This game, as I looked at it, kind of felt like this is the Mass Effect that we got instead of Andromeda. Does Horizon Zero Dawn deliver like a good narrative and like character-driven story much in the way that the first two Mass Effects do?
So far, yes. I'm only still at the very beginning, from what I can tell. I just went through my big trial and tribulation. Things happened. Now I'm on my way to become Hokage. Like, you know how every character has their development arc of the call to being a hero, the denial of being a hero, something forces them to become that hero, and then the adventure starts?
Yeah.
I'm just at the adventure starts now.
Is that open world game?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming this is just as the world has finally started to open up for you?
Yeah, so I just found my first long neck, which is the equivalent of the synchronization points of Assassin's Creed. And speaking of synchronization points of Assassin's Creed, I realized something as I was syncing up with this long neck, and it kind of like opened up my map to show me like where other things are. You know, the way that it's described with all the Ubisoft games of you have just this mystic power and you can kind of see through walls and shit doesn't make a lot of sense, but they actually thought about it in Horizon Zero Dawn.
How so? How did they overcome it?
Basically, when you were a little child, you fell into a ruin from the old technology. And you found this little thing that's kind of like a magnetic chip that kind of clips onto your head, basically. And she calls it a focus. So she turns the focus on. It displays like this little hologram bubble. And then it like picks up heat signatures, kind of shows you like, does like the eagle vision thing, basically. So it's like, hey, there's this technology that no one else has. So basically everyone else is like, normal trackers besides the other people who have this technology. Spoiler, sorry. Besides other people who also have these focuses on, they're just like, yeah, everyone else just uses, you know, normal people hunting and gathering things while you can track enemy movements. And everyone's like, that's kind of crazy. How are you doing that? You're like, oh, don't worry about it.
You just need to get at good other people.
Pretty much. At one point, I literally... Right after I got the ability to tame some of the machines, I was like riding my horse through a place. There was a cutscene, and then the guy was like, after the cutscene ended, like just the random NPC was like, whoa, there's a Strider. And Aloy goes, no, 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 that's mine. He's friendly. Don't worry about it. He's like, how'd you do that? Don't worry about it. Just don't attack him.
Can you ride any of the... friendly creatures that you get, or are they more like a second combatant if you encounter other robot animals?
So I believe they're called Striders, or they're walkers, or whatever they're called. So they're like the horse shaped ones. Those ones you can actually ride. Everything else kind of just works as a companion to follow along with you for a specific amount of time.
And then do they just get bored and wander off? They're like, oh, that was fun. See you later.
Nah, your override command kind of stopped being so override-y. And then they're like, oh, you're a human.
Oh, they get aggressive.
Human. Yeah, then they get aggressive. Then you got to put them down.
Sad.
But it's all good. Oh, I also got to fight some humans, because that happens in this game as well. So far, I'm enjoying it. I can see why it was getting so much praise when it first came out. I will say, had this game been on the Switch, would have been a perfect 10 out of 10 for everybody.
Is that just because of the portability element of it?
Yes. Mm. Basically, it's giving me, like, Zelda Breath of the Wild meets the future, I guess. Zelda Breath of the Wild meets dinosaurs. There you go.
Okay, yeah. Like, the Guardians happen to be more, like, anthropomorphic or animal promorphic. I don't know what that is. More reminiscent of animal shapes instead of giant six-legged bulbs. And you can hunt them, and they're more varied. Like, that's... But otherwise, Breath of the Wild, flexibility, and, like, exploration.
Pretty much. My screen went dark, guys.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
We can still hear you, though. So it's okay.
Yeah.
That's good. But yeah, no, I'm really enjoying the bejeebers out of this game. It kind of hits me with all of the feels. But yeah, and I also decided to grab, because of what Neil was talking about with the twist of Danganronpa 3, I decided to grab Danganronpa 1 and 2, because I believe, do you have to play 1 and 2 to kind of really understand what's happening in 3?
I don't know, to be honest. After playing everything so far, I think only the games are really necessary to play, and the anime is kind of more supportive of just the second game, and I don't think it's necessarily crucial to the main plot. But from what I've read, it sounded like V3 is just reliant on knowing the basic story from Danganronpa 1. But the twist in 3, like within the first chapter, I think is way more powerful if you had played the other two games. Maybe it's a matter of, like, setting up expectations, I guess.
I could dig it. So, yeah, so I decided to pull the trigger on that since it went back on sale again for a ridiculous price. I think it was, like, $10 on PSN.
I was thinking about adding them, or picking them up, too, just because they, like, I guess I don't know for certain how well they play on PC, but they play, V3 plays amazingly well on PC. It's, like, super fluid feeling, and... granted, I could be using a mouse if I wanted to. I've been doing a controller just out of habit, but I think any issue that people would have with the gameplay would probably be pretty easily rectified by using a mouse instead. Is that all you've played this week?
That and I played a little more Call of Duty. The servers came up for a little bit and then they went back down. So nothing's changed there. Call of Duty's still great.
Have you gotten any further in, or have you made significant progress in the zombie campaign?
I have not played the zombie campaign. Actually, just played just that one time I turned it on, was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm not really a big zombies fan.
That's surprising.
So it's not really my bag.
That's a pretty popular game mode as a whole, though, right? Maybe not this iteration, but...
Most people like horde mode type games. I'm not really a horde mode type person. Wave-based shooters just don't appeal to me all that much.
And you don't like to keep a lot of old stuff that you don't need?
Correct. Wait, what?
Get it? Hoarding? Huh? Eh?
I see. I see what you did there. You rascal. Couldn't think of a word. Am I still recording? I am still recording. Yay! That didn't die. The stream died, though. The stream died.
Yeah, I was noticing that. I just saw the new stream is on Cookie Skim Milk, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that stream's even up anymore.
You were correct, it is not up.
And my top monitor is no longer on for some reason. So, you know, I'll troubleshoot that later.
To go off a bit of what you just brought up with Danganronpa, I'm into the second chapter, the second trial, and the one observation I can make about that game that's new, I guess, is that with each game, it's gotten progressively more strange or weird. So it's kind of like when a creator has released one game successfully, then they're like, oh, maybe I can be like, maybe I can push more towards what I really want to do and make things a little weirder with the second game. And then with the third game, things are like a little even stranger than like, there's some weird shit. I'll just say that much. But the writing's pretty good so far. And I just think in general, like, there's really not any major improvements from game to game in terms of like gameplay
okay.
or mechanics or anything. It's just steady improvement over writing and like character designs to some extent, and just like quality of life changes. A few features here and there go in and out, but overall, it's been really enjoyable. As soon as we're done talking, I'll probably start playing some more. Aside from that, I've just been watching a lot of Gintama and catching up on some anime I missed while I was out of town on my work trip. And I know, Scott, you've watched Gintama. Cookie, have you?
I've only seen an episode or two, so I don't want to be considered like someone who's very familiar with Gintama.
I've also only watched an episode or two, so I also don't want to be construed as someone who's very familiar with Gintama, but I do want to be construed as someone who knows everything about that entire show from start to finish.
What?
Because that's what people do on the internet, right? They just assume they know exactly everything about everything.
Oh, I see. I see where
and
you're
then
going.
When Cookie's wrong, we're going to burn him. Burn him at the stake.
There's just...
digitally.
I've said it before, but like this... That show is awesome. It was the start of apparently season 3, the first episode where like the show and the characters in particular are very self-aware that this is going to apparently be a recap episode, and it's stuck on like a single frame of like the outside of their building. And like I find myself sighing and thinking to myself, like, oh, should I skip this? Is this a filler episode? Only to find after the credits that the entire episode is about them arguing over, or not arguing, like they literally have a Death Note battle over beef in a hot pot. And by Death Note, I mean like you get the internal thoughts or like the inner monologues of each character as they try and plot out how they're going to get the beef from a hot pot without appearing as like, you know, without appearing greedy and like trying to save face at the same time.
Right, but they still want the beef.
It's spectacular. It's great.
I mean, my favorite episode of the like two or three that I've seen is one of the characters gets thrown into a prison and he's pretty much trying to be like the ultimate inmate to completely reform the prison society so everybody can sleep peacefully at night. So then once they've fallen asleep peacefully, he can sneak out and finally escape. And it's really wonderful because his reform has stuck someone else who's been trapped in the prison trying to escape forever. It prevents him from escaping. And so it's the narrative of the guy who's reforming the prison in order to escape, which is like the final joke. And the previous character's like frustration that he can not escape because this guy's cell is across from him and it doesn't seem like he sleeps at night, so he has no opportunity, and he finally has a change of heart for his cell neighbor, only to find out that actually they were trying to deceive each other the whole time for their escape route. It's a really awesome episode because it's funny with its gags for every time that he reforms the system and foils the long-term inmate's escape. But then, you know, the final joke at the end just like knocks you out of your seat laughing. It's so good.
It's just like the example of a series that's been going on for what I would otherwise say way too long that works out because the majority of the content, at least that I've seen, is like comically filled.
Well, isn't it ironic or spoof episodes as well? Like there's one where they do the dragon balls, but it's like the ooey gooey balls, and that's the sticky icky balls. And so
and that episode like, is about the guy Hijikata
trying to get a cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. That's a fucking great episode too.
Yeah, and so I've just gone through all of the episodes of Gintama I know, but it seems like when you work from a parody template, it is a lot easier to continue your show. Like, you only have to riff off of other people's creative, or if we're talking in the case of Dragon Ball, less than creative material in order to keep like your episode going. So I think there's less put into the like creating the story from, you know, nothing. There's no like de novo synthesis. So I'm not saying that I guess I want to say like there's no de novo synthesis, so it's at least easier in the sense that you already have a storyline to work off of for these gag episodes, but they still have to write all the gags and whatnot. I think that gets a little less tiring though in the long run.
Yeah. I would say that I think you made the recommendation once to start watching like further into the series before you start it, or instead of from the beginning. And I
feel like that's what I'm going to do if I go to do it.
I think that's probably the smart move too. Because as I'm watching like the first 24, well, see, I'm not sure where a good starting point would be regardless. Maybe you just need to have a significant other or a friend just handpick out really funny episodes to get you introduced to the characters.
But then they'd have to see the whole thing and have an idea of it, which makes it tricky too.
Yeah, I guess it's just that since I've been able to see maybe like 5 to 10 episodes here and there at random, as I went back through the initial 24 episodes or 25 or so, I think I'm on, I found myself enjoying those more because I already know who the characters are, and now I get to see exactly why they're in the situations that they presently are in. Like, there's a poor homeless guy that is kind of the butt of multiple jokes throughout the series, but like knowing who this guy is, I think his name's Hasegawa, knowing who he is has allowed me to better appreciate his origin story, which I think otherwise would have been kind of boring. His origin story as into how he became homeless and stuff.
Right.
Okay, so that basically says, hey, what I did was a mistake when I would just watch the very first episode and was like, eh, this is okay. It's kind of random, but it's okay. So I should go and give it a chance, but not watch the first episode?
Yeah, you should just pick out, like, you should look up favorite episodes or funniest episodes of Gintama and look those, or watch those before you... I mean, and maybe that's the right way to watch Gintama as well, or a right way. But I definitely think there's something a little deeper there in terms of the serious storylines. I don't know. I will find the Hot Pot link, because I think that episode was pretty fantastic.
Speaking of Hot Pot, are we ready?
I think we are, but... Scott, you brought this to our attention, but the UK Gambling Commission has officially has restated that loot boxes are not gambling.
That's right. So you can find pretty much at your favorite gaming news website, you can find an article probably within the last couple days that notes that the UK Gambling Commission has finally weighed in on the like legality of loot crates. Are they gambling? Aren't they? Should they be regulated? And the answer is ultimately no. That they posted a statement essentially outlining that as it stands, loot crates aren't within the realm of gambling law or regulation, at least in the UK. Though I do believe I believe it's Belgium. Don't correct me, but obviously correct me if I'm wrong and don't quote me on it, because there's quite a few European countries that I'm sure will have some sort of legal action or consideration about this in the future. But I'm pretty sure Belgium has made moves to qualify loot box gaming as gambling. And I thought the thing that was most important to note about these articles is they should all point out that the line between like gambling in a video game and using video games to promote like gambling behavior is really pretty thin between that and actual gambling digitally. And partially, I think, the reason that the UK Gambling Commission did not decide to make any sort of prosecutorial move is because they note that when it comes to gambling, you can always cash out your chips. Like, the money invested going in can ultimately be cashed out and returned to a user. I mean, that depends if you're a successful gambler or not. But in the case of loot boxes, there's a lot of games where putting money in and getting something gives you some sort of outcome or reward that is not then able to be transformed easily into a dollar or other currency payback. But they definitely do note in their statement notes that besides the cash out issue, ultimately a lot of people are paying attention to how loot crates affect players like children in games and their access to money and how it can be predatory behavior to have incentives for kids to spend their parents' money or their own money in order to be successful at games or get content that may be game success relevant and not just superficial. And I'm just wondering, you know, is this something we're going to have to encounter with all of our games in the future, having some sort of microtransaction or additional payment loot box element where we're mining for resources either with lots of time in order to access content within a game's infrastructure, or if we'll be paying outright to access certain things otherwise?
I guess I'm not super surprised by the UKGC's statement. And as a whole, it certainly seems like transactions, microtransactions, are going to be a part of the games we play moving forward, because if we're not seeing them in, even if we're not seeing them in like single player or multiplayer purchased games, it's been a well-formed staple to free-to-play, like the free-to-play platform now for like decades.
A while. Yeah. Well, and it just got introduced into, say, one of the most popular games played today, League of Legends, within the past couple seasons. Once you've had that kind of like market permeation, it's going to be, I think, pretty common to see it pop up in a lot of new games as well. Like, there's no reason not to copy the most successful games. And if the most successful games that had maybe held out from having them previously are buying in, I feel like the cynical point of view is that we should expect more games to adopt them and not less, regardless of like the overall community's concern about it.
Yeah, I think where it starts to get way too, I mean, League, I think, has had it for 2 years within the form of mystery champions and mystery skin purchases.
Right. And now they've put in their whole like inventory and loot system, which is a very complex way to run through the loot box system.
Where like when you have a loot box and you're not even sure if you're going to get like a quote unquote skin or a mechanical function or feature like a champion, I think that's where it gets worse.
Absolutely, yeah. And also those more technical loot reward systems certainly benefit the actual creator of the game. Not the creator of the game, but I guess the game is definitely the greater beneficiary by having a more and more complex system for, I guess, the value of each item or loot element, because there's only so many things that are transferable or convertible into another form of, say, in-game resource currency. And so by having multiple resources that you can only manage in selective ways, they can further kind of funnel your investment into more restricted and categorized uses.
So moving forward, are we going to just see like essentially this business practice create a bigger divide for the types of games that we play? Because we're not going to, I don't think there's a feasible way to create a loot box like this, you know, this real money paid treasure chest of random goodies within like a visual novel or a lot of single player games. And like when they do pop up, that's when people get like noticeably concerned, like with Shadow of War. But if that's what's making these companies the most money, or capitalizing or maximizing their profits, I guess would be a better way to put it. Like maybe there is some concern for people that only play AAA games that all they're going to get at this point is going to be multiplayer shooters.
Yeah, can we start calling them shooties?
I'm down.
Maybe
Call of Duty multiplayer shooty.
But yeah, maybe that is what we're going to see. Like, I don't think Shadow of War's issue is going to be something we will continue to see, because I hope that we as like a consumer base are smart enough to realize that paying more money on top of what you've already paid for the game for a single player experience doesn't make sense unless it's legitimately for like expanded content, like DLC.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms, but...
And if I think the other consideration too is like, obviously they're finding a pay model that works. If you can get someone in at a lower price for the general product and then sell them additional content, and some would even say maybe content that they feel if they're going to buy the game, then it should be necessary for the full experience. I think the way that games are priced is built to take advantage of that system, as opposed to me paying $80 for a really, really good single player game with lots of features and things, and I don't have to pay another dime afterward. It still may be a harder threshold for like a general number of buyers than selling them a $60 game and then $20 worth of what many of the purchasers at the $60 price point might consider, at least if not in the immediate moment, but later, essential content or really desirable content for their game. And so by delaying these purchases, I think we kind of fit in that same economic model as the disposable razor, where you pay for, say, your generic brand razor that has a disposable head, and it's really not that expensive to get the like actual razor and then its blades. But then when you burn through your first four or five blades and you go to buy a pack to restore it, like that's when you're getting hit with pretty heavy prices over and over and over again. It's smaller than buying the razor outright, but it's certainly not particularly cheap for just using the disposable, like for what the disposable razor technology is.
And that brings us to our sponsor,
Dollar Harry's Shave Club.
Harry's.
Oh shit, we got some communication errors here.
We have some competing sponsors here. Sorry. No one's getting paid now.
Sponsored by Scott's Razors. I'll send you sharp things in the mail. Just give me your address and $20.
When we talked about Star Wars Battlefront 2, I don't think we really addressed apparently how bad the microtransactions or the loot boxes have made it pay to win as well. Where having
Absolutely.
The right cards basically gives you an extreme advantage over people not buying cards or not buying boxes. Even though the issue there was brought up over not being able to play Heroes without playing dozens of hours or spending, you know, significant portions of money. But hopefully that is enough to make people aware that like the pay to win function shouldn't necessarily have a part in a game that you paid to acquire to begin
play
with.
Already. Yeah, absolutely. Cards on the table on my end, though. I'm subscribing to the very cynical thought that we're going to get to a point of saturation where we're going to be saturated with the number of games from popular publishers, and they could be, for the most part, pretty good games that will come out with these pay schemes and these pay-to-win and really pay-to-play kind of elements. And ultimately, if we want to play video games that sound interesting or use IPs that we want to enjoy, we may bite the bullet. And every time we bite the bullet, it further reinforces that behavior. And ultimately, we get to a point where we're just like, well, I'll buy the game outright, and I won't spend much or any money on that additional content, and I will find my experience detracted from because I'm losing to people who have just invested a greater dollar amount. And who knows, you know, what kind of behavior that instills. Does that does that further condition me to spend money to keep up with these people if I really like the game otherwise, or I want to feel invested in it? Or does that push me out of that purchasing habit and I'm more critical about my game purchases? I don't know how that'll go for the general consumer. And I really hope that it's obviously in the realm of boycotting things that are less rewarding to players than they generally should be. Or if it will move to us just kind of accepting it as the new normal and electing EA as president for 2020.
Well, if it, this is not going to make you feel any better, Scott, but we're in America. My brother did buy Shadow of War for Black Friday, and I then subsequently saw him put $20 into his PlayStation account to buy some loot boxes, and he's not even into Endgame. Not even to Endgame.
Like, were his why? Orcs not enough? Did he need more epic orcs? More legendary orcs?
I didn't even know, man. But I was like, why? Stop it. No. So there you go, Scott. General consumer says,
if we can't save Cookie's family, give me a game. We can't save anybody.
Yeah, maybe it's important to point out that like the pay to win has been a part of AAA with NBA 2K.
For at least
2K.
A little while now.
Yeah, the 2K series is now very much pay to win or spend hours upon hours of grinding to get your basketball player like up to par with other people that are paying to win.
Ironically enough, he also got that.
I wonder how much he put into street points or whatever they call it now. Cookie, why don't you tell us about Bungie's next move in PR management?
Well, Bungie is doing everything they can to take EA out of the limelight with their microtransactions by throttling, and by some reports, throttling heavily the XP gained after you hit your max level in Destiny. So for those who haven't played Destiny, after you hit level 30, I believe, that is the max level, you start receiving Bright Engrams. And it's kind of like, it's still the same XP bar, but you should be... You kind of expect, oh, yeah, so the more Bright Engrams I receive, the longer it'll take to get them. Well, people in the community kind of noticed that, hey, as they were doing events with friends, they were getting a lot less XP for doing public events, whereas these things, where the things that they were doing should be a stable amount of XP, they were receiving less. So Bungie quickly said, no, we're not doing that, and turned that feature off, and then admitted that they were doing it, and then... that they're going to figure something out. But yeah, so Bungie's trying to be EA and screw over their fan base.
I just really love the idea that they're like, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Are you currently playing Destiny 2 at all?
No. There was this thing that happens. Call of Duty came out. Actually, I think I stopped playing Destiny 2 like before Call of Duty came out. Oh, speaking of things I'm not playing, Stardew Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Glad I did not hop in on that.
There's just too much. And I was like, okay, let me watch a couple of tips and trick videos. I'm going to figure this out. No, there's just too much, Neil. There's just too much.
It does require like a degree of concentration that at times I'm not willing to commit.
I'm like, I want something I can just like pick up for 5 minutes, play for a little bit, and put down. That's not Stardew Valley. Like, was fishing the other day and I was like, oh wait, I've actually got to be like staring at this screen in order to like fish properly.
Yeah, okay. Damn it, Cookie, do you think getting a wife and raising a family is easy?
I don't want to. It seems like so much work. She's always nagging and then the kids are just useless.
Don't even get him started on Stardew Valley.
But yeah, I tried to give a guy a can of soda for his birthday. He was not enthused.
Was it a can of soda that you fished out from the ocean?
Pretty lame birthday gift.
No, it was a can of soda that I bought from the evil corporation that's on top of the hill because, you know, they sell things. And it was his birthday that day, and I didn't have any crops ready, so I gave him a can of soda, and he was like, nah.
I killed local business for you. Here's a soda.
Oh, in case it's not already obvious enough, don't buy a membership to that place.
That's what I hear, that literally they kill the community center.
Yeah, I don't know whether to like question why it exists or not, but to have basically a feature breaking plot device in there, like as a viable option for you, like I don't know.
Not only that, but after you finish everything and pay them enough money, they leave town, give you a soda machine that gives you one soda a day that costs that you can sell for one gold.
Wait, that's actually a thing?
Yes.
Wow, I never ventured down that path, so holy crap.
So yeah, so as further insult to injury, they're like, fuck you, but goodbye.
Is Destiny 2 a good game?
Destiny 2 is a fun game.
Is there enough content to keep a player there for more than, I mean, like, for enough time that you would otherwise attribute to like a loot shooter or loot based online game?
There is enough content if you have friends and a free schedule. Otherwise,
well, my yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that Destiny is the type of game that you buy to play with friends pretty regularly. Like, the idea is to have, it's like a bowling league. You get a couple friends together, you meet up every Tuesday night, and you do some Destiny or Destiny 2 play. And like, that's part of a routine kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just surprised, yeah, though, that no one I talked to that has played Destiny 2 or was playing Destiny 2 is currently, except for like, I think one or two people that are only playing it because they have it on PC, and so it just came out like a month ago.
So yeah, so I guess Scott put it the best. It is your weekly meetup game, but it doesn't have enough to be a weekly meetup game. So it's like, so think about an MMO, like any MMO you've played, but just the starting area.
That's a really sad mental image.
And that's the end game for you. Unless you've got a lot of time, and so think of an MMO, just the starting area, and then right after the starting area, it doesn't give you enough to do in-game stuff, but there's also in-game stuff like right there.
But there's a cave over here that if you grind at for a while, you'll get to end game, but it's a while. It's a long while.
As Cartman put it, we must go to the forest and kill boars. If you ever see the World of Warcraft episode of South Park.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. But yeah, so basically, yeah, I'd much rather get together with the random friends and play an MMO that has like more than one thing to do. That, and they've almost fixed the raid system to where like you can just randomly party up with people with their people can lead you through the raid if you're by yourself, or you can lead people through the raid if you're down one person basically. But it's still not quite there. I want to be able to play the game until a new game comes out. Then I guess I'm just going to stop playing the game, because that's just what I do. I stop playing games. And on that depressing note,
if you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
And if you've been enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
But more importantly, please tell a friend and help us grow our audience and our Destiny 2 clan.
Don't even get me started on our Injustice 2 clan.
is it not going well? No one playing?
I have not turned on Injustice 2 in so long.
It could be going great. We just don't know.
Yeah, John's keeping it afloat right now. Good work.
I'm proud of him.
All right, guys, I've had a pleasure recording this episode of the Fancy Roman Podcast. Phenomena.
Yep. We'll try and live stream it again next week. At least I will. Possibly. We'll see. Turns out it's harder than I expected it, maybe. I'm not sure.
I could anyway, do it from my end, but I like we don't have any graphics or anything for it. And I don't know if anyone
was I was looping the Fancy Ramen logo, that intro I made a while ago.
Oh, sure.
after like 30 minutes into the thing, I was like, oh yeah, I can just loop this after I figure out how to do it. But I need to restart my computer, so I'm going to stop recording now.
Goodbye, everybody.